It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening, and welcome to An Adventure in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here tonight with Mac Burns, Executive Director of the Clatsop County Historical Society. And you had a magical event last weekend.
We didn't talk about it because we had a guest, but old-fashioned funny games, the return after 3 years.
Oh, Carly was so happy. She remembered these things because she was little.
I was kind of surprised.
Right? She was four when she went last time, or almost four. She was three, almost four.
Yes.
So this time she was a kind of a pro.
She brought her posse with her.
And then my sister-in-law too said you had this like genius like marketing style too, where every time she was getting ready to leave, you'd get on the loudspeaker or something and say, "And in 15 minutes, we're gonna."
My booming voice.
Yeah, we're gonna do this activity, and she said every time she said.
So the funny thing, I my first museum that I worked in was a 17-acre living history site where there would be at any given day 8 or 9 people in costume. Mm-hmm. It was a frontier village, basically, an 1880s cowtown. And, 30-some buildings, a blacksmith all the time working and showing you. And then our big event was the Old County Fair, based on an 1876 fair. And there would be, with all staff in costume and volunteers, there'd be 150 people in costume.
Oh, my goodness.
Stagecoaches, people riding horses, gunfights, pretend gunfights, sheriffs arresting people. I mean, it was just like the saloon was serving root beer. People would stay at that event for 2 or 3 hours, max. This little thing on the grounds of the Flavel House that we've been doing for 17 years, for some reason, people come and they stay for 3 and 4 hours.
I know. Yeah, they love
it. And it's because of that, that we have things staggered every half hour. So you've just kind of finished making butter and you've gotten it packed up and you're like, okay. But then, it's just another 10 minutes to the pie eating contest.
Yeah. And so you go do something else. You do an activity that you haven't done.
Yeah. And then, that ends and, oh my gosh, we want to make ice cream. The ice cream making is just in 19 minutes now. So it's worth staying. And all of a sudden you've stayed the entire day.
Yeah. And pie eating was popular.
So did Carly do the pie eating before, or was this her first time?
She did, but you and I were talking about this before we went on air, that the little ones think it's like kind of intriguing, and then they're like, oh my goodness, where's my fork and spoon? So that was her a couple of years ago, but this time she was like all in.
She was all in.
Ready to do it. And talked her older cousin into doing it. You successfully talked her younger cousin into not doing it. And he was very pleased with that. You said you were feeling bad. And afterwards, he was like, no, that was not my game.
Because I bump an older kid.
Yeah.
I always go the youngest first. And then the four-year-olds just sit there and look at it and do like one lick. And
Carly said too, she said, you asked him, are you sure you want to do this? And he was like, nope. He doesn't even eat dessert. Anyways, he's like not a sweet, sweet eating kid. So that was a good one to talk
out
of. And
see, sometimes, I don't know if that was the case this time, but sometimes the parents are just like, oh, come on, do it. You like it. Not thinking of the consequences.
Right.
That their kid's not going to like it. And
it's
and you're
really
going to get putting up your nose and all over your clothes.
And well, and again, like Carly talked her older cousin into doing it, and it was way out of her comfort zone, I'm sure. But both loved it. I mean, it was it was the one activity they kept talking about. So good job. And they did say that the kid who won, really went at it. I mean, it was like.
There was only one contest because we do the pie eating 2 times each day. So 4 times over the weekend. And there was one time that I declared a winner. And if you'd actually weighed what was left in the pie, I probably picked the wrong one.
Oh, no.
It was really close. I mean, they had gotten all the pudding and the whipped cream, and it was just trying to eat the crust. And it's in a tin,
which
so it gets
hard.
A little hard. And the experts kind of flip it so that it's just on the table, and they can lick it off the table.
Oh, yuck.
But I was traumatized because there was one that was like just right out of the gate. I thought, oh, this is going to be the winner because the filling was gone instantly.
Oh my
goodness. And then she was trying to get the crust, and the others were catching up. but I don't think she vomited it out, but it came out of her mouth. And it was really disgusting, and then she ate it back.
Okay.
So I'm choosing to believe it was not a vomit, but it was in her mouth, and she was chewing it.
Sure.
And it came out, and I was traumatized because she sucked it back up.
Oh, my gosh. So you gave it to her?
No.
Oh,
no,
you didn't?
Because there were two that, like, were further along at this point, and she spit it out again, and she started, like, putting her head down to, like, and I just said, "You're the winner over here." Because I was
like,
so
stop it.
I was like, I don't want to see her try and eat it again.
Poor kid.
And then when I really looked at the two pies, and I could tell the mom of the other child was kind of like, but didn't say anything.
Yeah.
And when I looked, I was like, probably should have given it to this other one.
But what do they get? I mean, they get like accolades. Good job.
No, they actually get a $5 gift certificate at Purple Cow Toys.
Oh, $5.
Yeah.
Again.
So, I mean, for a kid, that's pretty,
still
pretty great.
It is really
but
great.
I could not watch that little girl eat.
But you don't
want to
keep
again.
Eating. Yeah.
No. I was really traumatized by that more than the kids are.
Well, Carly did not talk about that. So
that was not at hers.
Yes.
That was the last one on Sunday.
Okay.
There were like six kids in that one.
So funny.
Yeah, that's a fun event. And
yes.
I'm glad that Carly came and had a good time.
Yep.
Because that's why we do it. We do it for kids.
We'll do it again.
That was one of the best things. My board president at the time, when the first year we did it, was Randy Stemper. And the first year, we had no supplies, so we had a sponsorship, but we had to go buy all the stuff.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, it's a free event, so.
Right.
And we actually overspent, and we had some snacks for sale for the volunteers.
Yeah.
But it's available for everybody. And I was nervous all day, and Randy was there, and I kept walking over to him, and I said, well, the corn dog sales are going well, so, you know, we may, with the advertising and all the supplies, we may break even. And he let me do that like two or three times. And the third or fourth time I came over, he said, Mac, look at all the families. They're having a good time. I don't care if we lose $1,000.
Yeah.
This is why we're in business. This is why we operate. They're all here on the grounds of the Lullhouse having a great time.
And they're playing games that you bring back every year. Badminton, that was popular.
Without phones, without TV.
Yep.
They're entertained. And
old-fashioned fun
by
games.
By golly, you can have fun without that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, I love
so.
It. Good.
All right. So shall we get to the, or do we have anything else we got to talk about?
No, let's do it.
All right. So these are things that happened tomorrow,
yep.
May 23rd, 1701. Captain Kidd is executed.
Mm.
And it's not that go-kart place south of Seaside.
That we checked just to make sure.
Yeah. I think that's with one D. It's like
it
a
is,
kid.
Yep.
Kid.
Yep.
And Captain
no
Kidd,
relationship.
Of course, with two. And, you know, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I think he might have gotten ripped off.
Oh.
Because he was actually hired by New York to be a privateer and kind of protect against pirates. And he seized a ship that was, I believe, Spanish, but it had an English captain.
Oh.
And the English took issue with this.
Well, sure.
But then he also, instead of coming home to New York, he sailed to a pirate haven in Madagascar. So that's what makes it a little questionable.
Yeah.
But then he heard, like, hey, you're being labeled a pirate. And he sailed back to New York and basically turned himself in. And then they sent him to England, and England hanged him.
Oh, my gosh.
So he may or may not have been. I'm not sure. The jury's still out. I don't know what to think on this
one. Either way, there were some things probably that weren't supposed to happen.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know what the rules are when you're, like, hired as a privateer.
Right, yeah, I mean.
To, like, raid other countries' ships. You know.
I guess they kind of go out the window.
1785, Benjamin Franklin announces his invention of bifocals.
Ooh, I appreciate that.
That Benjamin Franklin.
That's good.
What a character. 1911, the New York Public Library is dedicated.
Oh, to?
Now, just dedicated, like started.
Okay.
Starts.
Oh.
And Taft, I think, is the president. He shows up to dedicate it. But if you are touring New York City, that's a stop you should make.
Okay.
I highly recommend the New York Public Library. It's a great place to have lunch on the front steps and then go in and
it's
tour.
Massive.
It's huge. It's amazing. 1922, Walt Disney incorporates his first film company.
Oh, okay.
And it's the Laugh-O-Gram Films.
Oh.
I don't know, anything with an O in the middle makes me laugh. The Laugh-O-Gram.
And he never knew it, just his name was going to just become iconic.
1934, police kill the famous outlaws Bonnie and Clyde.
Ooh.
And maybe we'll talk more about that.
That's a big one. I had that one.
1945, Nazi SS Chief Heinrich Himmler dies by suicide.
Mm-hmm.
We're not sorry about that.
No.
We're sorry maybe it wasn't more painful. I don't know. 1960, high rank. It's Nazi Day, apparently.
I know. I saw a lot, too.
1960, high-ranking Nazi official Adolf Eichmann is captured.
I was going to let you have all these ones.
Yeah. 1980, The Shining.
Ooh.
The movie, The Shining, is released. Technically, an Oregon film.
Well, of course. What do you mean, technically?
Because yeah. There's only, like,
it's only
a minute and a half that's filmed in Oregon.
Oh, is it all in a studio, the
no,
rest of it?
No, I think it's in Colorado and in a studio. Okay. But the beginning overfly is of Timberline Lodge.
Yeah. But and so the inside in the door
is, I think, like someplace in Estes Park or something,
oh,
Colorado.
Interesting. See, yeah. That's the part that I was, because it's supposed to be, Timberline Lodge. But they didn't actually film in the lodge.
No, but they did actually. I just learned this. I thought it was just the very beginning, the overfly. But when they come out running out and he chases him into the little snow maze, he's actually running out of the front of Timberline Lodge.
Okay, so there's that.
So that's why it's about a minute and a half tops.
Well, I haven't seen it because, I mean, I don't want these images in my mind. So, but I always think that's interesting that because it's such a beautiful lodge.
That's one that a lot of people question because when they come to the Oregon Film Museum, they don't realize they're in the Oregon Film Museum. For some reason, they think they're in the Astoria.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, even that, if you're a Goonies fan, it's not just Astoria. It's all of Clatsop County. But The Shining, because we have some merchandise, and one of the filming experiences, we did it.
I have the QR code to prove it.
We riff on it. So people are like, The Shining? Really? That's filmed here?
But it's fun, too. You picked a fun one.
And then 2015, Ireland legalizes same-sex marriage.
Okay, good Ireland. For Ireland.
Wow, yeah. But our history highlight of the day, 1900, the Associated Press News Service is formed.
I didn't see that
AP.
That is the highlight of the day.
Or I always like to say AP Wire.
Right.
But I don't think it's ever wired anymore, is it?
No, not anymore.
So what I miss?
You missed just a couple. So also 1900, Civil War hero Sergeant William Kearny becomes the first African-American to receive the Medal of Honor 37 years after the Battle of Fort Wagner.
Ooh.
But 1900.
Is he still alive at that point?
Oh, 1937.
Oh, 1937. That was 1900.
Well, it was 19. You're right. 1900. So it would have been 37 years prior. Yeah. No.
He could have been alive.
I don't know. Might be. And then also 1928, Rosemary Clooney was born. That's a good one, too.
I don't know if she ever did anything in Oregon, so I don't know if we care about that or not. You know, the Fort Wagner, though, that's the battle in, Glory.
The
movie. I was trying to think something I couldn't remember. Denzel Washington and Morgan Freeman and Matthew Broderick. That's kind of what wipes them out. They lead the unsuccessful attack against Fort Wagner.
Yeah.
So he would have been in that group, the 54th Massachusetts, I believe.
Interesting. Okay.
All right, but we said Bonnie and Clyde.
I know. So this is.
And even though it's not Astoria.
Right.
Or even Oregon history. Bonnie and Clyde is kind of exciting.
It is.
And I've seen a couple of specials
on it. And tragic.
Yes. So we thought we'd talk a little bit about it today. So on May 23rd, 1934, notorious criminals Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow are shot to death by Texas and Louisiana state police while driving a stolen car near Sales, Louisiana. I don't know if I'm saying that right. S-A-I-L-E-S.
Sales. Know.
Sales, perhaps.
It's French down there, so who knows?
Saiz.
Yeah.
Salils. I don't know. Bonnie Parker met the charismatic Clyde Barrow in Texas when she was 19 years old. That always throws me off because my son is 19. How is this possible? 19 years old, and her husband, she married when she was 16, was serving time in jail for murder. Mm. Shortly after they met, Barrow was imprisoned for robbery. Parker visited him every day and smuggled a gun into prison to help him escape, but he was soon caught in Ohio and sent back to jail. When Barrow was paroled in 1932, he immediately hooked up with Parker, and the couple began a life of crime.
So she was married to someone else?
Yeah.
Still.
Oh, we'll get to that.
Oh, yes. Okay. I guess I didn't know this story. After they stole a car and committed several robberies, Parker was caught by police and sent to jail for 2 months. Released in mid-1932, she rejoined Barrow. Over the next 2 years, the couple teamed with various accomplices to rob a string of banks and stores across 5 states: Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, New Mexico, and Louisiana. To law enforcement agents, the Barrow Gang, including Barrow's childhood friend Raymond Hamilton, W.D. Jones, Henry Methven, Barrow's brother Buck, and his wife Blanche, among others, were cold-blooded criminals who didn't hesitate to kill anyone who got in their way, especially police or sheriff's deputies. Among the public, however, Parker and Barrow's reputation as dangerous outlaws was mixed with a romantic view of the couple as Robin Hood-like folk heroes crime together.
Folk heroes.
Yes.
Their fame was increased by the fact that Bonnie was a woman, an unlikely criminal, because women are never criminals.
Right.
And by the fact that the couple posed for playful photographs together, which were later found by police and released to the media. See, they would have done well in today's age.
Yeah, there's the mistake.
They right? would have been streaming videos and Instagramming and Twittering and all that other stuff. Police almost captured the famous duo twice in the spring of 1933 with surprise raids on their hideouts in Joplin and Platte City, Missouri. Buck Barrow was killed in the second raid, and Blanche was arrested. But Bonnie and Clyde escaped once again. In January 1934, they attacked the Eastham Prison Farm in Texas to help Hamilton break out of jail, shooting several guards with machine guns and killing one.
Texas prison officials hired a retired Texas Ranger, Captain Frank Hamer, as a special investigator to track down Parker and Barrow. After a three-month search, Hamer traced the couple to Louisiana, where Henry Methven's family lived. Before dawn on May 23rd, Hamer and a group of Louisiana and Texas lawmen hid in the bushes along a country road outside Sales. When Parker and Barrow appeared, the officers opened fire, killing the couple in a hail of bullets. All told, the Barrow gang was believed responsible for the deaths of 13 people, including 9 police officers. Parker and Barrow are still seen by many as romantic figures. However, especially after the success of the 1967 film Bonnie and Clyde, starring Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty.
It's an okay film.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it. I don't think it was great, but all right, so here are the top 10 things, perhaps, that you may not know about Bonnie and Clyde. Number one, Bonnie died wearing a wedding ring, but it wasn't Clyde's.
Yeah, that's so
scandal. Yeah. Like, that's the scandal here. So 6 days before turning 16, Bonnie married high school classmate Roy Thornton. The marriage disintegrated within months. See, young kids should never marry.
Right.
Disintegrated within months, and Bonnie never again saw her husband after he was imprisoned for robbery in 1929. Soon after, Bonnie met Clyde, and although the pair fell in love, she never divorced Thornton. On the day Bonnie and Clyde were killed in 1934, she was still wearing Thornton's wedding ring and had a tattoo on the inside of her right thigh with two interconnected hearts labeled Bonnie and Roy.
Well, that doesn't go well with the story now, does it?
I know.
Well, she didn't divorce him because he was in jail, it sounds
That's right.
like, right? So, number two, Bonnie wrote poetry. During her school days, Bonnie excelled at creative writing and penning verses. While she was imprisoned in 1932 after a failed hardware store burglary, she penned a collection of 10 odes that she entitled Poetry from Life's Other Side, which included the story of Suicide Sal, a poem about an innocent country girl lured by her boyfriend into a life of crime. 2 weeks before her death, Bonnie gave a prescient poem to her mother entitled The Trail's End. Did I say that word right?
Yeah.
Okay. The Trail's End, that finished with the verse, "Someday they'll go down together and they'll bury them side by side. To a few it'll be grief, to the law a relief, but it's death for Bonnie and Clyde."
Wow.
Sounds like a song.
It kind of does.
Yeah.
Okay, but do you think she was lured?
Oh, no.
Lured into a life of crime.
No, it doesn't sound that.
You got it, Bonnie. You got to take responsibility for yourself.
Yeah.
All right. The Navy rejected Clyde.
Oh, there we go.
As a teenager, Clyde attempted to enlist in the U.S. Navy, but lingering effects from a serious boyhood illness, possibly malaria or yellow fever, resulted in his medical rejection. Hmm. It was a hard blow for Clyde, who had already tattooed USN on his left arm. Now, why would you do that before you join? Is that to, like, to prove, like, look, I'm so serious, I tattooed it on
right.
my arm.
Right, yeah. Again, those two are not making all the great choices.
No, they are not.
Number four, Clyde's first arrest came from failing to return, dun, 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 a rental car. Who knew you could get rental cars back then?
I know. That was kind of surprising to me.
The notorious criminal was first arrested in 1926 for automobile theft after failing to return a car he'd rented in Dallas to visit an estranged high school girlfriend. The rental car agency dropped the charges, but the innocent incident remained on Clyde's arrest record. Just 3 weeks later, he was arrested again alongside his older brother, Ivan Buck Barrow, for an even more interesting crime, possession of a truckload of stolen turkeys.
See, I want to know more about that too. But rental car, like, right, don't mess with Hertz.
Right.
They'll come after you. That just makes me laugh. And a truckload of turkeys.
Dinner right there.
So bank robberies were not their specialties.
Oh.
Although often depicted as Depression-era Robin Hoods who stole from rich and powerful financial institutions, Bonnie and Clyde staged far more robberies of mom-and-pop gas stations and grocery stores than bank heists. Oftentimes, their loot amounted to only $5 or $10.
Yeah, and was scary for those people involved.
That makes it a lot less romantic and sexy that, okay, you're just robbing this poor little gas station.
You're bad people.
Of their total income for the week, probably, and you're scaring the heck out of them.
Exactly.
And sometimes you're shooting at them.
Number six, Clyde chopped off two of his toes in prison. While serving a 14-year sentence in Texas for robbery and automobile theft in January 1932, Clyde decided he could no longer endure the unforgiving work and brutal conditions at the notoriously tough Easton Prison Farm. In the hopes of forcing a transfer to a less harsh facility, Clyde severed his left big toe and a portion of a second toe with an axe. Although it was not known whether he or another prisoner wielded the sharp instrument, the self-mutilation, which permanently crippled his walking stride and prevented him from wearing shoes while driving, ultimately proved unnecessary as he was released on parole 6 days later.
Oh, that's gotta hurt on two levels.
Again, he couldn't endure the unforgiving work and brutal conditions, but he's going to chop off a toe.
Yeah. I don't know that I could do that.
Well, no.
And I'm assuming the part of the second one was like an accident that he was aiming for the one toe. But what I don't understand about that, and I have all my toes.
The one thing you don't understand.
Well, we could talk about it for
parallel
a while.
Life existence.
Why can't he wear a shoe while driving? I'm picturing like working the clutch, and what about that requires you not to have a shoe on?
That's
I can't quite figure.
That is an interesting detail.
So not that I want to like have people without a big toe call me. I'm kind of fascinated by what makes it different.
I don't know.
And suddenly you're taking your shoes off to drive? I mean, that makes the pedal easier? Huh? It seems strange to me.
Yeah.
I can't get past it. All right. Bonnie walked with a limp after a car accident.
There we go.
Okay, they're all limping in this story.
Yeah.
Who knew? And I can't remember if it's portrayed that way in the movie or not. So on the night of June 10th, 1933, Clyde, with Bonnie in the passenger seat, was speeding along the rural roads of North Texas so quickly that he missed a detour sign warning of a bridge under construction. The duo's Ford V8 smashed through a barricade at 70 miles per hour and sailed through the air before landing in a dry riverbed. Scalding acid poured out of the smashed car battery and severely burned Bonnie's right leg, eating away at her flesh down to the bone in some places. As a result of the third-degree burns, Bonnie, like Clyde, walked with a pronounced limp for the rest of her life, and she had such difficulty walking that at times she hopped or needed Clyde to carry her. Mm. I wonder if it's trying to get rid of that tattoo, maybe.
Right. Number eight, souvenir hunters tried to cut off parts of Bonnie and Clyde at the scene of their deaths.
We should have reversed this because you're getting all really gross
this
ones.
This is terrible. On May 23rd, 1934, that six-man posse led by former Texas Ranger ambushed Bonnie and Clyde and pumped more than 130 rounds of steel-jacketed bullets into their stolen Ford V8 outside of Louisiana. After dozens of robberies and 13 murders, Bonnie and Clyde's crime spree had finally come to an end. With gunsmoke still lingering in the air, gawkers descended upon the ambush site and attempted to leave with souvenirs from the bodies of the outlaws still slumped in the front seat. According to Jeff Gunn's book, Go Down Together, one man tried to cut off Clyde's ear with a pocket knife, and another attempted to sever his trigger finger before the lawman intervened. One person in the throng, however, managed to clip locks of Bonnie's hair and swathes of her blood-soaked dress. Okay, people.
I can't even imagine. I mean, the most I could even imagine would be like picking up one of the bullet shells.
But also like 130 rounds. Yeah. I mean, so, well, I guess it was just six man posse, though. I don't know. Like, what took them so long to get down there and get away, folks?
Maybe they're the ones doing it. I don't know.
Interesting.
And it just seems very odd. Like, take a button, take a shoe, take a... I don't know. I mean, why take anything?
Again, why they were glorified. It was the pictures. It must have been the pictures.
Yes,
right?
I think it was. Their bullet-riddled death car is on display.
at.
Of course it is. At a casino, following the ambush of Bonnie and Clyde, a Louisiana sheriff, who is a member of Hammer's six-man posse, claimed the pockmarked Ford V8 sedan, still coated with the outlaw's blood and tissue. Mm. A federal judge, however, ruled that the automobile stolen by Bonnie and Clyde should return to its former owner, Ruth Warren of Topeka, Kansas. Warren leased and eventually sold the car to Charles Stanley, an anti-crime lecturer who toured fairgrounds with the death car and the mothers of Bonnie and Clyde in tow as sideshow attractions. Still speckled with bullet holes, the death car is on display at Whiskey Pete's Resort and Casino near Las Vegas, Nevada. Okay, Whiskey Pete.
Yeah. At least it's an anti-crime lecturer, so it sounds like he was trying to say, look, this is what happens.
See, I'm okay with the... If that's what it is.
Hopefully. I mean...
And that's the hook, is look at this car.
I don't know about Whiskey Pete's, though.
Oh, Whiskey Pete, no. That was one of the things, as a kid, way back in the 80s, the D.A.R.E. program... against anti-drugs. I was always struck, at least where I grew up, they would bring this shiny, unbelievably modern Corvette, and there was always a sign on it. This was taken from a drug dealer.
Oh.
And the message that me and all my friends received was not, wow, crime doesn't pay, you know, because you get your car taken, was how do they afford the Corvette?
Right.
It seemed like a very mixed message to me, and I never quite understood it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it worked, though, right, Mac? Worked on you and me. We both had D.A.R.E. when we were in school.
So that's true.
It's no longer involved.
I have not done drugs, and I have not jumped into a life of crime. So maybe it did work.
There you go. Last little detail here. Bonnie and Clyde were buried separately. Although linked in life, Bonnie and Clyde were split in death. While the pair wished to be buried side by side, Bonnie's mother, who had disapproved of her relationship with Clyde, had her daughter buried in a separate Dallas cemetery. Clyde was buried next to his brother, Marvin, underneath a gravestone with a hand-picked epitaph, gone but not forgotten. Yeah. There's a lot to be said right
Mom
there.
Mom disapproved.
Well, and it's just like, you weren't even together that long, but somebody knew you wanted to be buried side by side.
Yeah, well, didn't her poem say?
Oh, that's true. Her poem did say it, if that was about him.
That's true. May not have been.
So before we move on, because I forgot to mention, May 23rd is an important day. So tomorrow, it's my brother's birthday.
Oh, hey.
Happy birthday, Aaron. He's a faithful listener, maybe because my mom and dad force him to listen to it. But he's a good fan of his sister and likes our show. So happy birthday.
And he's a great uncle.
He's a great uncle, great brother. Yes. Yep. The best brother.
In the world. Well, happy birthday, Aaron. And thanks for listening.
Yeah.
And even if you're forced to.
Yes.
We hope it's not.
We're glad you're listening.
We hope it's not a terrible half an hour. We hope it's
it's kind of the story of his life. What is my sister making me do now?
And then
he smiles and grins.
You have a large league of people that you make do things.
I do. Do so willingly, maybe not.
Okay, so we don't have a lot of time, so we'll just give a little jump ahead that Goonies Week is coming up. Goonies Day. June 7th is Goonies Day. It's every year.
It's
in the middle of by mayoral proclamation. It's a holiday. Yep. And yet I don't get the day off. But just be forewarned, it's coming. We'll talk about it a little bit more next week. But fun things. We'll be showing the movie Friday night, June 3rd, I believe.
Okay.
Or maybe June 2nd, whatever that Friday is. At the Liberty Theater, and we'll have a costume contest. You could win fabulous prizes.
That's fun.
There's a 80s dance party. We're going to do the little boat race across the pond at the Flavel House again.
Oh, fun.
And you can become an Oregonian. 37 suggestions. If you do 15 of them, come back, you get a commemorative pin. That's the only way to get it.
Oh, I love it.
So,
well, that's going to be lots of fun.
Yeah. Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.